Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of you out in the virtual neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. You have joined Michelle Pope. That's who I am, as your host here at Life is a Sacred Journey. And it's Friday morning, but it's not really. So let me explain to you what's happening, because I know when you know what I know, right? So I'm going to have a conversation with you. So this morning, my wonderful guest, Lynn Abate Johnson, could not be with me on a Friday morning. And so just like we did with other guests in the past, we're recording this without you. But that doesn't mean that when we come on, that you shouldn't talk to each other in the chat and engage in this incredible conversation that I'm going to have with this incredible human being who just became a part of the circle of Michelle Pope's life and Life is a Sacred Journey. We welcome you back. We know that you have all kinds of choices to make on Friday morning. So go get your coffee, go get your tea, get your water, drink a lot of water, and let's get started. So let me tell you about Lynn Abate Johnson. She became a caregiver like many of us. Many of us who we know, women are the primary folks that are caregivers. We know that you guys out there are caregivers too, but women make up in the statistical data more caregiving than anybody else. So it's a daughter, it's a wife, it's a daughter-in-law, it's a mother-in-law, it's the neighbor down the street who recognized something was going on and decided to help that neighbor out. So we know that. And she became the caregiver of her mother for over 6 years. And I love the way she wrote this on her page, that she understood the typhoon, because I'm visual. So when she said typhoon of emotions, I experienced like blocking, you know, doing the Wonder Woman block, because you don't know from moment to moment what the expectations are of you, not only in the medical world of the person that you're caring for. How does it change the love? How does it change the relationship? How does it change you? You know, here at Life is a Sacred Journey, we're always saying, look for the good in everything. Look for the manifestation, and not being woo-woo, but manifestation of how it changes you, any experience, good or bad, because it will if you give it an opportunity, and it will change you for the good, even the stuff that pows us and knocks us to our knees. She was juggling caregiving duties with a full-time career. We all know what that feels like, juggling a full-time career. And when we say full-time, unfortunately, in the 21st century, we're not meaning 40 hours a week, okay? We're meaning you went home and you took a pile or a folder with you because you ran out of time and you still need to go home and do something for your mom who you're caregiving for, and you need to do that without feeling anxious and feeling like, hurry up and do this, mom, to get to that file. So full-time career. And the journey was not easy, because it created questions for Lynn, like, what am I going to do when I have to go to work? What's going to happen to mom when I'm, what happens to mom if something happens to me? All those questions that come up for all of us. So it is my honor this morning to bring to you, Life is a Sacred Journey family, Lynn Abate Johnson. And she has a wonderful book that we're going to talk about, but we're also going to talk about the spirit of this woman who, out of love, name of the book, and you know how I feel about love. Love is the key. I wish I could bottle it like we do water and you could pay $5 for it and you would be changed, but it's not that easy. It takes work to feel stuff out of love. So Lynn Abate Johnson, thank you for coming to Life is a Sacred Journey and bringing this wonderful book, the colors of the book, the hummingbird. Thank you. Thank you. Mine hasn't come yet. So Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. It's a beautiful cover. It's got her mom's picture, her picture, but the hummingbird and the the watercolors just really touch my heart. So I can't wait to get my book. And when I get it, I'll share more with you guys. But Lynn, welcome to Life is a Sacred Journey. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm so happy to finally meet you. I fell in love with you already, and we are kindred spirits because I also believe that really love is all there is. And, you know, from there, you know, everything else is figure outable, right?
So yeah. Let's start though, because this book is the birthing of a relationship that you had for 6 years. And I'm sure from what I read, the excerpts that I read when I ordered my copy, it didn't just begin there, because it began with a mother and daughter relationship that over different seasons moved to a season where you were caring for your mom. Mm-hmm. But it came on at a time when you were also building a career.
Yes.
So talk about that. Talk about...
Yes.
You know, how did it like that moment that you realized, because I always say it's a moment, but it's really drawn out. But there's a aha moment that happens for all of us in every situation where we go, whoa, wait a minute. I'm going to have to do this full time.
Yes.
Talk about that.
When people discover, they get to know my mom through my book, because each chapter is set up with a journal entry at the beginning. And the journal entry came from those 6+ years that we were taking care of my mom. And I was the family archivist, right? I was the one documenting everything. And so the journal was really important. It happened on a platform called That I Love. And a lot of your listeners and your audience and your community must know about caringbridge.org. It's just an amazing platform, and it really saved us and helped us be more efficient, because I was writing in that journal online every single day. So no matter where I was, in any hospital room or ICU waiting room or emergency department on the weekends, I was updating the family and friends near and far about what exactly was going on with my mom in the day-to-day kind of grind of that caregiving journey and what was happening with her medically. And so it was all focused on my mom. Yeah. The second part of each chapter in my book is set up so that people can see that everything is going to be okay. That's one of my main messages, is that you'll be okay. And even if your mom or your loved one leaves the planet, leaves this earth, they're still going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. And I hope that my book and my story empowers other family caregivers in that way. So each chapter has the journal entry, and then each chapter has the retrospective kind of what I was experiencing, how it was affecting me, and the leadership journey that I was on, and the growth that has happened, and the transformation through that caregiving and the grief since my mom died in 2017. Okay. And so it's interesting you talk about the relationship between my mom and I. We didn't have a real touchy-feely relationship, right? I was my mom's firstborn, oldest of five, and I had the more practical, pragmatic relationship with my mom. My mom knew I was capable of documenting everything, taking care of all of her admin stuff, you know, paying her bills, doing her filing, making sure, you know, everything in her life was kind of on track. And she was very capable. It wasn't that she wasn't, but she was teaching me, even in my older age, she was still teaching me lessons that I will always have with me. Mm-hmm. And so when she was diagnosed, it was a natural flow into, okay, now this is your time to step up and use what I taught you. And my mom never said that, but I knew that that was the truth. That was my time to shine and take care of my mom the way she always took care of me.
Wow.
And so it really filled my soul, and it just filled me on so many different levels to be able to almost become the mom of my mom without taking away her agency, and still really upholding her ability to be the boss, because she was always the boss. If she was feeling the slightest bit great in her day, you know, because it's a roller coaster, then mom was in charge. So I really practiced at giving my mom everything that she needed, including her autonomy and her agency, even when she was sometimes needing me to be more her advocate.
Yeah, I love that you said giving her her autonomy, only because I have, as we talked prior to coming on air, you know, 26 years in here at Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, of course, not in the same role, but now at the winter season of my journey with ASEB, soon to retire and move on to something else. But I realized that that's the biggest hurdle that not only the caregivers, the family caregivers, but even sometimes paid caregivers who we have here, it's easier to do it for than it is to provide someone with dementia or disability or pain, any of those kinds of things that we think of when we think of illness, that ability to do it on their own, because we think that they don't want to fail. When in fact, I see that they have I love that you said it, autonomy is like, it's fuel, food for my soul, if you allow me to be free to do something and maybe then assist me when I'm almost at failure or when I ask you. I've learned that, Lynn, over the last decade, even for myself, my kids wanting to help me in certain times when I've been ill, and I've realized I didn't want their help. I really just wanted them to know, be aware. And if I failed or if I fell or if I got sick over the toilet bowl after chemo or something, then I would need them. But don't hover and make me feel like an invalid before my time. And that's how I took it. And because I took it that way, I manifested that here at ASEB and said to the team, give them a chance to do it first. So talk about that, because you brought it up, sis.
Yeah, baby. I'm all for these, you know, conversations that are, they're sometimes uncomfortable and also very necessary, right? Because, you know, life is a sacred journey. Oh my gosh. Yes, it sure is. And I believe it's also, our leadership is also at stake, you know, because I believe that we're all leaders. And so by showing up in the ways that we show up in our lives, that's how we show up in our lives. Like, I remember I was at a seminar once and I heard, how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And I really took that to heart, because, you know, I used to be that person that hovered. And I used to be that person who would say, oh, I'll just do it for you. Through my journey of caregiving for my mom, I really learned, like, that lesson came home to me like nobody's business. Like, I couldn't have paid for enough seminars to get that lesson into me the way it got into me. And then I started, like you, I started being more that leader, more that person who really respected other people and treated people as whole human beings the way that I wanted to be treated. And so I started to do that more and more and more through my work, you know, in the industry that I'm in. So yes, it has definitely paid off, because it has integrated my leadership.
Yes. And oh, I love this woman. She's using all the words I love. That happens when people say to me, Lynn, how do you do this? How do you do this? How do you do this? And I always say to them, it's an integration of my life that I've molded it together. Well, I didn't even do it on purpose. It happened. And I realized that one thing fuels the other. So being a daughter, being a cousin, being a mom, being ASAP, Michelle Pope, CEO, whatever all that means, bippity bip. And if you open them up like this, then they become things that you just bring together and hold on tight to. But leadership, whoa. Everything that I do changes the way that I lead in whatever paradigm of leadership that I'm in. So when you talk about leadership and caregiving, how did those two things come together and begin this trajectory that you're on in cultivating and mentoring on compassionate leadership?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I have struggled with it. I have struggled with my own leadership journey, of course, over time. I have, you know, that God-given role of being the firstborn, and I'm a female, and I always relished the extra responsibility that those roles automatically piled on me. Whether I wanted them or not, I did relish it because it made me feel important. It really fed my ego when I was younger to be relied on. It fed that ego side of me, you know, kind of that shadow side. Yeah. And then an interesting thing started to happen, and it's still really unfolding now, Michelle. Like, I am by no means through anything. I think, you know, until I die, I'll be learning these things. But it really did start to unfold through those years of learning to be more patient, learning to relinquish control, you know, having to have it all figured out, having to be fiercely independent to a fault. Yeah. So those are things that I used to think were leadership qualities that I now, I won't say reject. However, I will say that I'm reframing those leadership qualities that I grew up with thinking were important to now being more collaborative. Wow. Instead of controlling. And that's just one example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the freedom that that gives you when you I love you're using all my favorite words, when you relinquish the burden of, you know, I did a woman's seminar, a woman's retreat, and I made it, blocks, and on them I put things like, you know, imposter syndrome, all these things that women take on, and that, oh, I have to look strong, I can't be vulnerable, and when you take those bricks out of the bag, the bag then becomes stuff that you can look at through the lens of love. And love is never heavy.
That's it. That's it. And if I could change one thing about our culture today, it would be bringing more vulnerability. It would be bringing more curiosity. It would be bringing more kind of breakdowns to get breakthroughs. Because I think that I'm learning now.
Yeah.
And I have learned through that journey of caregiving and through the grief journey myself personally, that we are better together and nobody goes it alone. And the reason that this book had to be birthed was because I felt like I needed to reassure my fellow family caregivers that you're going to make it. You're going to make it through, because I had such a drastic, almost, you know, sometimes I think it was weird the way that I thought about when my mom got diagnosed, I thought I was going to die. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a death sentence for me. Mm-hmm. And because I never imagined being on the planet without my mom.
Right.
Right. And right. I guess that's, you know, that's a lot of times what daughters do, and sons too. But I really had to, it's a good thing that she lasted as long as she did, because I had time, you know, I had time to do what, when I went through hospice provided grief counseling for all five of us. Mm-hmm. And I took advantage of it. It was a full year of once a month grief counseling. I highly recommend it. God bless hospice and organizations like you, Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay. I mean, without organizations like yours, you know, I would have been lost. And they said that I did some anticipatory grieving, and I did. I put myself in that place. I didn't even know anticipatory grieving.
I know. What is it?
What in the heck is that? And she said, I think you've been doing some anticipatory grieving before your mom died. And I did, because I'm what I call an optimistic realist. And to me, an optimistic realist, which is, I had to come up with a term for my, how I play my life every day,
I love it.
It's like, I expect the best and I plan for the worst. So I always have like a plan in case something goes wrong.
Yes.
I'm kind of thinking ahead. I'm thinking a few steps ahead.
Yeah.
And the thing that helps me really with that is being knowledgeable, you know, reading articles, reading blogs, you know, looking at podcasts and communities like yours, listening to other people so that I can learn different ways that aren't my own. Mm-hmm. And I can really tap into the collective wisdom. And so
I love it.
What I believe about that vulnerability that I think would help our world heal is that we all have something to offer, and we are all doing the best that we can with what we have in front of us. And since I'm a marketer, and since I teach and consult on marketing, and especially digital marketing, mm-hmm. I am up to transforming the way that we show up online, because so many of us now, that's the way that we're showing up. And
yeah.
We have to, for lots of different reasons, not just the pandemic. And I see that people are showing up, like, for example, on LinkedIn, saying, you know, I don't usually post personal things here. And I'm commenting right away saying, please do.
Yes.
It makes you more human, and it makes other people in the world of B2B or, you know, LinkedIn business, it helps us see you for the whole human that you really are. And so without that, you know, if we continue to keep secrets and we continue to kind of shelter, you know, other people from what we might be going through at any given time, then we lose that connection more than we already have. And I think to bring back connection and to bring back this collective wisdom, we need to be sharing and reaching out and having these conversations. It can be one-to-one conversations. It doesn't matter, but one conversation at a time, one post at a time, one comment at a time. I believe it can make a difference in healing our world. I really do.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, because I do think that we have placed such a burden on individuals that have titles of leadership, that our expectation of them is that they must be perfection at all moments and times. And then when they make a mistake, there is no place for grace. There's no place for forgiveness. There's no place. We go right in to the worst case scenario, and that person, all of a sudden, that person is not allowed to make mistakes, and everything they do is a deliberate action, and it gets acted on in the community in such vile ways where, oh my goodness, you know, I'm glad that I make mistakes, Lynn. It shows that I'm willing to try something new. It shows that I'm still alive, which is wow. And it shows that what you said earlier, that I have this fascination with life, even the stuff that makes me fall and scratch my knee. I get up and I laugh a little bit sometimes, or I look at my boo-boo and I go, oh, I have a boo-boo, and I heal. But then something happens from that experience. But people hide because they're afraid of being attacked every time they say or do or make a mistake in a way that is really non-intentional. You know, I think that to me is where I'm glad you're talking about marketing and social media and these relationships, because we're losing the ability to be in, I love what you just said. Okay, I just had an aha. We're losing the ability of having intellectual conversation, heart-to-heart conversation, without it being a debate.
Yes. Yes, absolutely true. You know, I have followed a lot of activists over the years, and I followed a lot of CEOs and executive directors like you and founders of companies. And the ones that have compelled me the most through my leadership journey and those difficult moments are the ones who I see being vulnerable, and even being vulnerable online, or being somewhat controversial, where they talk about risk-taking and they talk about having people, you know, on their teams be risk-takers. They want to cultivate a culture that is not afraid of making mistakes. Mm-hmm. They want to cultivate a culture that is all about stepping up, stepping out of our comfort zones.
And Lynn is just, folks, what she just said, Felicia, pull that out, because that is an idea that if we took into not just the workplace, but parenting, caregiving, our educational journeys, then we wouldn't be so like fixated on the outcome that is way down the road. We would be able to live the experience of the here and now. It's like, you know, baby's gonna walk eventually unless it has a form of a disability, which you're gonna be aware of, and you're gonna nurture child out of it. So why are we picking the child up and making it walk at 2 months old when it's really not ready? Let it do what it's gonna do. Does a kindergartner really need to know how to read before it gets to kindergarten? I don't know. I don't think I did. So.
Yeah, I mean, is all of that easy? Is letting go easy? Because I am the original super codependent and hoverer. And so I could do it all for everybody and try to control everybody else's lives, right? I've spent most of my first part of my adult life doing that. Is it easy to let that go? No. Is it worth it? Oh, heck yes. It is so worth it, because like you said before, it gives us all, human beings, it gives us all the freedom to be exactly who we are and exactly who we are not.
Yes.
And that's all okay. I remember there's an activist that I've been following for many years, about the last 3 years. And she went viral with this one video that she did. And she's just amazing. And she said, she wrote a blog post or something else following that viral video. And she said that, you know, pick a lane, pick something that you're really, really interested in healing in our world, whether it be education, healthcare, whatever it is, just pick that one. And yes, be an activist. And there's no way you're going to help our world heal unless you're working on your inner work, unless you're doing your inner work. So I have learned now, and I'm practicing this, to the extent that I'm taking care of myself, yeah, mind, body, spirit, you know, all of it, to the extent that I'm taking care of myself, I then am able to maybe influence some healing in our world.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So that's more the case. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go rescue and I'm going to go be a savior and I'm going to save everybody. No, I mean, I work with my coach on this. There's a big distinction between, you know, being collaborating and assisting someone and saving them, or, you know, somehow controlling the outcome, because we can't do that. We're human beings. We don't do that.
Right. Right.
And so we need to realize our own capacity, and we need to really protect our energy. You know, I've been learning lately to manage or protect or economize on my energy even more so than my time, because time is finite. We only have so much.
That's right.
These days, I feel like I have endless energy. You know, I published my book while I was working those 50 hours a week, by working nights and weekends and holidays, and still managing to keep myself healthy, you know, eating healthy foods, nourishing my body with things that I knew that it wanted, instead of the old Lynn, which during those 6 years with my mom was not eating at all or binging on sugar and just really being in that state of disrepair myself.
Yes.
Trying to figure it out. It ain't easy.
No, because the body, the mind, and the spirit can thrive on neglect.
Yes.
It can, because it can get so used to that paradigm that it just doesn't, and you don't fuel the subconscious. You're only fueling this conscious paradigm of all of this. And you all know, those of you that have been walking with me before all of this know that I am the ultimate pleaser. Lynn and I are like sisters in the rock. But I have learned over the years when to say no to myself, because my inner self says, go do that. That's a good thing. And then my other self's like, girlfriend, you don't want to do that. You're tired. You've had a long week. You're not going to bring anything good to this experience. You're just doing it because somebody asked you and you don't want to say no. And I say no. Nobody cares that I said no. And they come back and ask me again for a different time. And then I'm better at it or whatever. Or they never come back. And that's okay, too. It doesn't matter, because in that moment, Lynn is talking about living in the moment. And I think that is, wow, for people like us that were created in a time where that's not how the world taught us to be. Remember, I told you, when I did watch television as a kid, this woman had on this suit with pads here, and she had a baby on her arm, and she had a frying pan and a briefcase that was like a man's briefcase. And it was about bringing home the bacon and frying it up in the pan, and then never letting him forget that he's a man. Women, you can do it all. And it was the biggest lie. And it wasn't what the woman's movement really was about. It was about our rights in the workplace. It was about equal salary. It was about, you know, not being, having to hide that we had five kids, because then everybody would go, yeah, she called in sick today because she got five kids. No, it was for all of that. And you know what? Guess what? We're still fighting that.
Exactly. I mean, we need to shake those old paradigms, and they don't blow up by themselves. We need to blow up those old paradigms. In fact, out of this book, out of love, the next book, because I talked about this, but I only grazed the surface.
Okay.
I'm writing this other book, and I have to, because it's about redefining matriarchy. Like, all of those old tapes, all of those old things. You know, Oprah Winfrey coined it once, and she said it was the disease to please. Right?
That's good, Oprah.
We grew up with that disease to please. You know, my mother, I write about this in the book too. She would always say, Lynn, be nice. Like, don't contradict anyone. Definitely don't contradict any doctors, because she saw the doctors as the be all and the end all. She viewed them as gods, which that was fine. That was her frame of reference. That's the time she grew up in. She was old school. So of course she was going to revere the doctors, you know. And I came in, you know, with, you know, both barrels ablazing, like, this is my mom and you're not going to do this to my mom and that to my mom. And I was so protective of her. And so I had to really learn how to be, and I talk about this, you know, assertive and aggressive in a way that was kinder, you know, because I can come off, you know, I can come off that way, a certain way, which, you know, everybody that knows me well knows that way that I can come off. And so it's not a matter of shrinking down. It's more a matter of stepping up in different ways that are, you know, a little bit more gentle and still assertive and still, you know, asserting our own leadership and our own autonomy and agency and kind of, you know, standing in our leadership, right? Like hands on our hips, like, we got this.
Not letting people make us feel guilty and feeling like who we are is something we should apologize for. You know, it, again, your book, Out of Love, everything, if you take a breath and think about, out of love, I need to say this. It does not mean that you're not being courageous. It does not mean that you can't speak it with passion. It just means you're going to level the playing field and you're not going to try to do harm. You know, it, my opinion is my opinion, but I don't want it to do harm. But I also am not going to express it because you might feel like I'm deliberately trying to hurt you when in fact, that's not true. So again, we're always, the imposter syndrome is it's rampant in the DNA of the female gender. And now that we're in a world where gender is being discussed in a whole different paradigm, there has to be some more healing that happens because it's creating more division.
Yes. And I know we're all learning this, and I really love and embrace that fluidity that's starting to surface. And I know it was always there. This didn't just happen in the last few years. It was always there. It just, you know, people didn't have the language or the name for it. And I really love the learning that's happening. And if we let it, you know, it's going to also heal our world. All of this connection and, you know, the listening, like I'm learning to deeply listen. And so, yeah, sure. I have strong opinions most of the time about a lot of different things. And I'm learning that there's my way, there's somebody else's way, and then there's a third way. And I've been learning this through my leadership journey as well. And I've been learning about my own boundaries. You touched on this earlier, and I love this because, you know, when we start to assert our own boundaries and we say no to something that we thought that we should, and I don't use that word anymore because it's dangerous, but we should have said yes to it, again, it gives us that freedom to be whole, loving human beings, and starting with loving ourselves. And that's what boundary setting really does. And oh my goodness, it's a practice, right?
It really is. And loving yourself as much as you love others. You know, I love humanity. I give humanity a lot of my life essence, but I realized one day I didn't love myself in the same capacity. And it meant going back, and you talked about this too, doing that healing work and really loving myself so much that I could wear a tiara.
Yes, I love that. For your birthday, yes. And any day.
And everybody, I went to the bank with it on. Everybody was like looking at me. And finally the teller said, Michelle, I love your hairpiece. I said, girlfriend, it's not a hairpiece. That's a tiara. There is a difference.
Get it right.
And she laughed and I laughed, and the man sitting getting his banking next to me at the other teller booth, he laughed, and then the woman in the back that was counting, she laughed out of what, five words. A whole environment of staunchiness, quiet banking turned into this moment of humanity because I was willing to put myself out, not be the bunt of a joke, not be hilariously a clown, but that is who I am. I love to wear tiaras on my birthday. Why would I just wear it in my house?
Yes.
Where nobody's gonna see it, And finally, I'm at that place where I'm like, you know what? I know I'm not going to live another 66 years. Let's just say that. That's like, that would be a science miracle. And if I do, I'll be on Science Magazine. But yes. I do know I can enjoy and celebrate this 66 years.
Exactly. In this moment, where we are right now. And I say, Michelle, more of that, please. Like in every business scenario, in every conference room, on every, you know, business platform, use it for the good of the healing of our world. Use it for transformational conversations.
Yes.
Because I guarantee we all have something to contribute to these transformational conversations. And it's a matter of being just a little bit braver, just a little bit more courageous, just a little bit more caring more about other people, right? Than caring about what other people will think of us. Mm-hmm. I used to tell my sales team this all the time. I had a pretty big sales team back in the day when I was in sales. And I would say, and they would say, oh, I feel like I'm selling. Oh, da, da, da. And I'd say, look, when you're focusing on what other people are going to think of you, who do you care more about? You're caring more about yourself. Why don't you practice caring about those people that you are sharing this amazing product with that's going to make their life better than worried about what they think of you?
Exactly.
So use the energy. Yeah. Use the energy and use it differently and tell the story of what's in it for them, how it's going to benefit them.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And the legacy, this is, you know, oh man, Lynn, you and I could, we have to get together and talk more.
Yes.
But one of the things that Lynn is talking about, friends, siblings, partners of life is a sacred journey, is not everything you are is seen, okay?
That's exactly right.
And if you value your life as in its moment, as a sacred journey, not everybody that you're going to be around at any given time is going to truly see you for who you are. Boom, bam, that's it, okay? But if you know who you are, you can remain true to that in every circumstance, even the ones that push your courageous button. Because I've been in a room with all these PhDs and people, again, lovely people, not degrading them, not mad at them, but where they threw their degrees in my face. And I thought to myself at the moment, and I was at a good place, I was where I am now in my life. But then I started envisioning, Lynn, if they had told me that in my 20s and my 30s, oh my gosh, I'd have went home and cut my wrists.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't stand up. They don't see me. Oh, I'm not intelligent. Now when people do that, I laugh to myself in my head. Usually I'll smile where they can see it, because it's sort of like, good for you, that you had the tenacity to stay and stick in and do something. But you know what, good friend? You're no better than somebody who did not. Mm-hmm. And you need to be more in tune with this in audience that you've collected together, that the rest of us don't have that, or some of us do, but we don't know what you know.
Exactly.
So my be husband, kind and be gentle.
My husband always says, read the room.
Read the room.
Read the room. It's, you know who you are and be humble. And be vulnerable. Share what is going on. You know, our lives aren't defined by numbers and degrees and letters. Our lives are defined by how we show up for ourselves first and others. That's how I want to be remembered, is that I showed up for myself and for others. And, you know, that for me is a key right now. That's what I'm practicing That's what I'm learning. And I agree with you. I mean, 100%. You know, my sister and I talk about this all the time because we're not always feeling that strong, right? We have down days, we have dips, we have what I call a crisis in confidence.
Crisis in confidence. Yes.
Right? Where we feel like, who cares? Nobody's listening. And, you know, it's just a day where you're not feeling that strong. And on those days, maybe that scenario in that boardroom would have like thrown your ego, you know, into things and your saboteur, right? That imposter syndrome would have raised its ugly head. Fortunately, I think with age comes this wisdom, as long as we're listening for it. And as long as we're reaching out to each other, the way that you're reaching out to your audience is just amazing. I mean, I saw you online and then I started watching more and more of you showing up. And I just was like, I'm falling in love with, I'm having a girl crush right now.
I'm so glad you did. Yeah. I'm so glad you did. Yeah. By you as well. For Thank all you. The same reasons though. It's the authentic spirit, the authentic heart, the level of empathy that this, like this morning, friends, you know, came into work, got busy, got caught up in something, didn't do something with Lynn I needed to do. And when Felicia brought it to my attention, ran, got it. But I apologize. I gave the reason why we came up, we got here, and that we never skipped a beat. It wasn't, again, it's like, we didn't skip a built beat because we didn't have any other expectation of each other than showing up and showing up in love. You see the difference? Then I don't have to feel guilty. She doesn't have to feel like she has to hold me accountable and be my, yeah. No, yeah. There's a freeing in relationship that happens also, Lynn, and I'm sure you talk about it in your book as a caregiver as well, because I'm sure it happened for you. This moment where you really truly get it and you're like, okay, I understand my role here. I understand my role here. But you know what? I'm going to allow my heart to help guide me, because it also thinks just as much as my brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lynn, we've been talking. So Lynn Abati Johnson has written a beautiful book. Michelle Pope has not read it yet. I ordered it. It's coming. And as you know, I will share, because I share every book with you that I read, because I think it's important for us to have books in our hand, to feel the page, to it brings you closer to me. I do. My kids bought me a tablet. I have the ability to do it there. I can't. I need the book. So thank you for Barnes and Nobles and all the Cody bookstores in the world and Amazon. So Out of Love is a daughter's journey with her mom to the end, meaning to the end of this life, this presence, this existence. It also helped to Lynn to look at what she does as a leader, consultant, and I'm going to ask her to give you data so that you can both get the book as well as to contact Lynn so that she can come into your organization or walk with you as a leader as you move forward in this new leadership paradigm that I'm telling you, study the millennials, study the XYZ alphas. They're not going to stand for the stuff that us baby boomers stood for and the silent generation. And it's because of how they have grown up with social media. They've watched all this stuff happen, Black Lives Matter, women's rights, the Me Too movement. They've seen it in a different paradigm, you guys. We have interracial marriages that didn't happen in the silent generation, or if they did, they were against the law. Now kids are looking at their partners and friends, and even the whole gender conversation has been, okay?
Yes.
So you gotta open up to this new way of looking. It doesn't mean that the old is gone. No, it doesn't. Because as long as there's a generation that's left on the earth, the silent has fed into me. So I got a little bit of silent in me as a baby boomer. But I'm also closer because I'm at the end of the baby boomer at 66. I'm at the end. I'm close to those millennials and I get them and I understand them. Then because I'm close to them, my son, my daughter's 24, I'm learning about, oh my goodness, these X, Y, Z, alpha people. And I'm learning. Be open to the learning. Lynn and I had a conversation earlier about gender. And, you know, I'm telling you, I've told all the young people in my life, I don't know any of these terms. You were either gay, bisexual, or heterosexual. When I was, there was only three things that you could be and that people talked about. Let me just say it that way. And now we have this whole cornucopia of words that describe who an individual is.
And the identity, like the identities are vast as they should be. And here's what I'm saying, you know, to my nieces and nephews in their 20s now.
Yeah.
Teach me. And an old mentor of mine in my sales days used to tell me all the time, you know what? God gave you two ears and one mouth. So guess what? You're supposed to listen twice as much as you talk. So I am a stand and a commitment for more listening and less talking, you know, talking at people about what we think is the way. And, you know, this is my journey. It's like, okay, I'm learning new ways. I'm figuring out new things. And if our commitment is to be related and really be concerned with community, which mine is, it's my purpose in life, then the listening has to be a bigger part of our conversations.
Lynn, how do people get a hold of you for your work that you're doing I love this leadership work that you're doing. So how do they get a hold of you?
Well, it's my name.com. So LynnAbatejohnson.com. And I'll spell it out for the listeners who are on
please,
audio.
Yes.
It's LynnA, B as in boy, A, T as in Tom, E as in Edward, Johnson. So LynnAbatejohnson.com. And Johnson is Johnson.
And so please, you know, pick up your phone, but get your fingers on your desktop there on your planner. And if you're a nonprofit leader, I know for me, I'm constantly trying to keep up with the different things that are going on, not because I want to implement them all, but maybe create a space where we can share. Creating a culture of renewal through a program with Rebecca Simon Peter, and we're doing that here at ASEB. And again, learning, talking, listening to each other. But Lynn can help you too. And, you know, I think sometimes we, I've done Tony Robbins, I've done all of it. You know what I'm saying? And I will continue to do many, many things.
Yeah.
But I also think keeping in touch with grassroots movements means talking and bringing people into your organization that have had like experience. So if you're a social service nonprofit, someone like Lynn, who has been a caregiver, can tie that leadership message in to what your staff is experiencing on a day-to-day. So LynnAbatejohnson.com, and we'll make sure we put it in. And then the book, Out of Love, show it again, Lynn, so they can see it. So when you see that beautiful cover, you know that's the book you want to pick up. Yes. And put it in your travel bag so that you can read it on the plane or whatever, or just go for a walk and read it, or, you know, snuggle up and read it. Or like I do with my books, I take them with me and I love to sit once I've been hiking for a minute and sit and read for an hour or so the dog can run around and do whatever. However you read books. But
yeah, also available on audio and ebook.
Okay, so it's also available there.
Any local library can get it. Any local bookstore can get it. I know there are a couple of counties in California. The library system already has my book.
Oh, good.
Yeah, San Diego County has it and Sonoma County has it so far. And you can go in and you can request that they carry it. Same with the little mom and pop bookshops, which I'm always wanting to support more. You can get it there too. Any bookstore can get it, any library.
So Out of Love, and get it and read it and share it. You remember the one thing that I do? I do keep a lot of my books, but I do give them away. Like I will read them and then somebody will come in here and say something and I'm like, oh, you need Lynn's book, but I don't want you to wait to get it. So I'll give you my copy. That's why I read them when I get them so quickly, because I know the universe, God, is going to send somebody to me that's going to cue me that they need Lynn's book. So, and I usually try to buy more than one copy also for that reason. So
I've
given away that book, Joy, 50 million times by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. I just keep giving it away because it's the book, right? So LynnAbatejohnson.com. So that's, write that down and we'll put it, I'm doing this, right? Because you know what that means.
Yes.
And then Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. And caregivers out there know, you're doing the best you can. Lynn's book and Lynn's comments today, I hope, have inspired you to know that you're doing the best you can. For those of you that are struggling and need help, in every county, there's an area agency on aging that has resources, caregiver tips. Life is a Sacred Journey. Go back in our archives. We have spoken to lots of people. Go to Lynn's website. You can get her online, get her book, reach out. There's people out there. Don't ever think that you're alone that will help you. And you just have to do one thing. You got to reach out, because we can't reach into you unless you reach out to us. And then there are those of us that will walk with you and stay with you along the way. So Lynn Abate Johnson has become a really good friend of Life is a Sacred Journey. I want you to go out and buy that book. I want you to tell others. I want you to hit the share button. All those things that will take this out to the stratosphere, to all my friends. And also, as we always end this, Lynn, we reach out to all of you that are suffering, like that you have this pain in your heart. You have a pain in your spirit that you're feeling anxiety, you're feeling depression, you're feeling like you can't take another step, take another breath, and you want to end it. I've been vulnerable with you to share that, spent many years in that place. Mm-hmm. But so thankful, as I told you on Friday, so thankful that I didn't do what my brain told me I should be doing at that time. That I listened to my heart, and my heart said, give it one more day, give it one more second, give it one more moment. Somebody's going to help you, and somebody did. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a miracle thing. It took some moments, but I hung on. And so to all of you out there that are feeling that in this moment, please, please dial 988, text 988. They still have that stupid 1-800 number because they need it. So it's 1-800-273-8255. But you don't have to remember all that. 988. Text it, call it, cry out. Somebody will help you. Yes, they have a backup, because we're all hurting right now. Even the ones of us that seem strong are hurting, okay? But don't take your life, because we love you here at Life is a Sacred Journey, and we know that life is sacred. We know if you hang on, the ripple effect of who you will become will make this world a better place, and not because you carry the burden of the earth, but just because you exist. So, 988, all right? Love yourself through another day, and over time, you'll see some miraculous things come out of your life because you gave it a chance. So dial 988. I always love you, and don't take your life. Let's thank Lynn Abate Johnson again for being here, for sharing her heart, for sharing her book. And I want you to follow her and give her all the love that you have given Life is a Sacred Journey. Share her book. Read her book. All right. Have a wonderful weekend. I love saying that to you.
I want to say to you,
yes,
ma'am. I appreciate you. I love you. And thank you for staying.
Oh, you're amazing. Lynn is sharing that with you. Thank you for staying.
Yes.
Thank you for staying. Yes. So hug a tree. When you can't hug nothing else, go hug a tree. It gives off, ooh-wee. I saw inside of a tree that it's not just one root, friends. There's these veins that are going through the tree that reach out to the floor of the ground and speak to other trees, and trees do move. Oh my gosh.
Chills. I have chills. Yes.
Yeah. So go hug it. It's living, it's alive, and it will love you back. Okay. Next thing, the cat and the dog. I don't know. They're my favorites. Pet them. That's good for your And do they bite? Somebody asked me that this week. And yes, dogs bite, cats scratch. But at the end of the day, go to a shelter where a dog or a cat is there, forgotten by a fellow human being, and show it love. And it'll show you the kind of love that you can't even imagine. So Life is a Sacred Journey family. You are the best. You are amazing. I love you. And you matter. So have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Say goodbye to Lynn Abate Johnson, who has been here sharing her life experience with us. And we'll have her back, because once I read the book, I'll have more questions, right? Okay. All right. We love you. Be well. Take care.